Going on, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Dolphins in Depth podcast. I'm Daniel Yafusi. Thanks so much for tuning in. And the win streak continues for the Miami Dolphins. Winners of three straight, the latest being a 24-17 victory over the New York Jets at MetLife Stadium on Sunday. The Dolphins improved to 4-7 on the season. And, you know, I'm not going to say that they're in the hunt for a playoff appearance, but let's just say they're keeping things interesting in the second half of the season. They'll put that winning streak on the line on Sunday at Hard Rock Stadium when they host Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. It's going to be an interesting game. It's the first time that they'll be facing Cam Newton since his release from the Patriots before the start of the season. And as you all know, he signed with his original team, the Carolina Panthers, in the past few weeks. He'll be making his second straight start, third game. And it's going to be an interesting matchup. You know, he had success against the Dolphins in week one of the 2020 season, not so much later on in the year. But obviously it's, you know, new teams, new teammates, different game plan. And I'm excited to get into a lot of that as well as kind of touch on some things from the Dolphins been over the Jets. But first, I want to introduce this week's guest. We have Ellis Williams, who is a Panthers beat reporter for the Charlotte Observer. He's in the McClatchy family. So I'm really happy to bring him on. Ellis, how you doing, man?
I'm cool, man. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on. Should be a fun game. We're about to preview a team. Two teams I think are in similar spots, and that's what I'm looking forward to getting to you with about.
Yeah, most definitely. And you know, for me personally, I'm sure you as well. I mean, earlier in the season, I was kind of eyeing this matchup because of, you know, kind of the elephant in the room, the Deshaun Watson rumors. These two teams, I mean, by all accounts, were the teams who were really most in on Deshaun Watson, kind of trying to see what it would take to pry him from the Texans, where he still is, hasn't played all season. It seems that by all reports, he only waived his no trade clause for the Dolphins. Regardless, neither team was able to get anything done. But, you know, they kind of move on and trying to solve the quarterback question in different ways. You know, the Dolphins with Tua Tagovailoa, the number 5 overall pick in the 2020 draft. And for a moment with the Panthers, it was Sam Darnold. Had a pretty nice start, you know, with Matt Rhule up there. Kind of shaky as the season went on, and obviously got hurt, which kind of opened the door for Cam Newton to make this reunion. So I do kind of find it interesting that both teams are kind of coming back and facing each other, you know, in the midst of those Watson rumors that have kind of settled down. But I'm sure that once the season ends and we get to the offseason, that'll pick back up. Just curious for you, Alex, because I'm sure it's been a crazy couple weeks for you. You know, you're new to the beat, coming midseason, and all of a sudden Cam Newton arrives. I mean, first off, what can you kind of say about what that has been for you and really for the city?
Yeah, so the return of Cam Newton was completely unexpected. When the trade deadline passed and it was revealed that Sam Darnold would be moved to IR, we peppered Matt Rhule at his would have been a Wednesday presser about quarterbacks they were going to bring in, and they did bring in a quarterback that day, but it was Matt Barkley from the Tennessee Titans practice squad. Yeah. To back up PJ Walker, because it looked like Sam wasn't going to be able to go, and Newton's name came up several times. Clearly Matt was playing his cards pretty close to the vest and being coy, not saying anything, because later it was revealed, broke by our own Jonathan Alexander of the Observer, amazing scoop, that Cam, David Tepper, the owner, Steve Drummond, a vice president, and Rhule were meeting Thursday. And once Cam got to Charlotte, you knew it was a done deal. And once the report, the more details came out, it was revealed that he called Cam Newton as early as Tuesday and asked him of that week and asked him if he wanted to come back to Carolina. And I know we're going to get into Cam's performance, but I will say you can't answer the question of what Cam's comeback has been like without trying to explain that the energetic experience at Bank of America Stadium when he walked out to coming home and the place went nuts. It's an all-time sports moment. I can't imagine people from Charlotte how they feel. Very rarely in sports do we get players who are iconic with one place and will always be known for being in their home, that home city. Cam Newton embodies everything about Charlotte and the Panthers. And in his first game back, they beat the Arizona Cardinals. The second one, they lose to Washington, and now they're sitting at 5-6. And truthfully, the feel good storyline is over. You know, this is about football now. This is about them winning games. It was some pretty down and out press conferences on Monday that you could tell Matt Rhule really got into his guys. And with that being said, it's time to, like they were saying, it's time to look on to Miami, because, you know, they have now put their eggs in the Cam Newton basket. Like you said, they were trying to get Deshaun Watson, not all that secretively. It was funny watching the contradicting reports, like, you know, is Christian McCaffrey in the deal? Is he not?
Yeah.
Will Deshaun Watson waive his no trade clause for Carolina? Reports were that it was only Miami, but then we got some sources here saying, no, he would come to Carolina. So, you know how this stuff works. People are you know, put out their side of it and we move on. But you're right about one thing, regardless of how this ends for either Miami or Carolina, they'll both be back in the Deshaun Watson rumor mill come February.
Yeah, most definitely. And it kind of brings me to my next question, the next kind of topic. I mean, I guess kind of all eyes are on, you know, the two quarterbacks at you know, the top of these matchups. You know, Tua, it's been a whirlwind one plus years, you know, obviously coming off the hip injury in Alabama, starting on the bench, taking over for Fitzpatrick. You know, they kind of catered this offense to him in year two, and it's been, you know, rough sledding, you know, sidelined for three games because of a rib injury. And then he has a fractured finger, which kind of sidelines him for like 1.5 games until he kind of comes in Thursday night and saves the night, really. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he's played really well, especially, you know, given the circumstances. I keep on saying, I think he's winning in spite of everything around him. But of course, you know, when the opportunity presents itself to acquire a superstar quarterback, a franchise quarterback like Deshaun Watson, I mean, all bets are off. I mean, you can never really tell what's going to happen there. And I think that it might be a case for Tua of, it's not really more so about him. It's more so about Deshaun Watson and what he can present, you know, might not be about what his potential and what his future, his ceiling may be, but what you know you have in Deshaun Watson. And I'm curious from the other perspective, from the other side of things, you know, one, just how did you think Cam looked in that first start? And I mean, truly, is this something where this maybe be an audition for him being the, I won't say the quarterback of the future, because, you know, Cam is, you know, Cam's on the back half of his career, not, you know, the front half. So do you kind of see this as a potential audition, at least to maybe start for this organization in 2022?
It's a great question. The Panthers are in a bit of a quarterback purgatory, meaning they don't really have an answer outside of this year. And it doesn't really seem like they're thinking about much other than this year, which tends to get general managers and head coaches in trouble down the line. And I say that for this reason. They're still paying Teddy Bridgewater, quarterbacking in Denver, who was the quarterback for the Panthers last year, of course, about $7 or $8 million just to play in Denver. Before even seeing Sam Darnold take a snap in a Panthers jersey, they picked up Sam Darnold's fifth-year option for about $18.5 million guaranteed in 2022. So regardless of what happens with Darnold, they're paying him $18 million in next year. And then you have Cam Newton, who they cut and replaced with Teddy Bridgewater, who then they replaced with Sam Darnold, which then gets them back to Newton. You see the carousel here, right?
Yeah.
It's maddening in a way. And a good example, sometimes the grass isn't always greener, right? So I say all that. I set it up to say this. This quarterback room is going to get quite expensive if Cam Newton keeps playing well and ends up being the quarterback for 2022. Because I don't know how you're going to be able to allocate, you know, if Cam demands $20 million.
And pay him a lot, too, now. I mean, that was a pretty big deal he signed just to pretty much play, like, the final 9 or so games of the season, yeah.
Yeah, 4.5 guaranteed upwards to $10 million with, you know, with Super Bowl clauses and all that. Yeah. But they're paying him starter money. So they're going to have to do some cap gymnastics. I wonder if that means players on these one-year deals that are making this defense special, Stephon Gilmore, Hassan Reddick, how do they retain those players if they're caught up in this quarterback controversy? But that is a way of getting to the point that Cam if you had to put a betting favorite on it, Cam Newton would be the favorite to be the 22 starter right now. They're going to look in the draft. They're going to explore all their options. But that is the drastic difference between Miami and Carolina right now, is that it, Miami at least has a young guy that they're still building on and an asset they could flip in any situation. You're not flipping Cam Newton for much. The Panthers are though in the short term, have a playmaking rejuvenated quarterback. They don't have a long-term solution, and I'm not sure where it's going to come from.
Yeah, and I want to touch back on something that you mentioned earlier, that, you know, they're really just focused on the now. I mean, is this, what year is this for Matt Rhule? Is this second year? So Matt Rhule's in year two, Ryan Flores is in year three.
Yep.
I feel like the C, obviously there's one extra year of Ryan Flores' tenure, and you know, he had a impressive 10-win season in his second year kind of leading that ship. I mean, Is the seat warm at all for Matt Rhule? I mean, if they were to miss the playoffs, I mean, what would be the tenor of the owner and of the organization?
It's a great question. If you go on Panthers Twitter, the seat's hot, right? But what seat isn't hot in NFL Twitter when your team's exactly. not playing well? Yeah. Look, things in this league, I learned in my first year covering the Browns was 2019, and Freddie Kitchens was the head coach. Yeah. And you got those type of questions middle of the year, right around this time. And you felt like Freddie was going to get another chance. You know, you don't see one and done a lot in this league. But things went from bad to worse. And the Panthers are now in a spot where if they have another New England game, if they have another Giants game and things go from bad to worse, then anything's possible. But if this team, you know, can get to 8 wins, if they, you know, essentially playing 500 football without being able to have a 500 record anymore because of the 17th game, Matt Rhule seems safe. There might be some coordinators that are in question, whether Joe Brady just leaves for another opportunity or it's just replaced altogether. It's so hard, Daniel, it's so hard to judge this team right now because you're talking about a quarterback who has had one full week of practice and now is getting ready to play a week 12 game. They've really scrapped all their plans from a X and O standpoint. Not that they've completely changed the playbook, but you're starting from scratch, right, with a new quarterback. And you're starting from scratch from a leadership standpoint, too. I mean, Sam Darnold was a captain. He had a C on his chest. They're starting center Matt Paradis tore his ACL 2 weeks ago against New England. You know, he had a C on his chest. So now, you know, you're in a team with a leader by his presence alone in Cam Newton, which then, where does that put Matt Rhule? You know, your whole message changes from training camp to now. It's a lot of patchwork, and a lot of times that can lead to you going down with your ship, but winning cures everything. And if they can string a couple together and be in the wild card hunt, they've got 4 games left against division opponents. Tampa looks incredible, but Atlanta's going nowhere. New Orleans looks in flux. They have a chance to at least put enough good taste in really the owner, David Tepper's discretion, and get to year 3. But that year 3 will start out hot, as you guys can relate with Brian Flores and how this year's been going for him.
Yeah, it's so crazy to me now. It's like, you know, even throughout the losing streak for the Dolphins, which, you know, went up to 7, you know, I mean, by the time they reached 4 straight losses, you had people, you know, on Dolphins Twitter saying, like, putting out names for new head coaching candidates. Yeah. And it's like we live in such a microwave society in terms of everything, that it's like if the quarterback isn't good halfway through the second year, if the coach isn't, you know, competing for Super Bowls in year 2, it's almost like, hey, we gotta, you know, jump ship and kind of start from scratch. And it's like, I'm always, I'd rather preach patience first and maybe draw things out a little too long than just kind of get rid of what you have at the first side of adversity. But it is so interesting. And really, as we talk about all this, it's going to be so crazy to see what happens with like the whole quarterback carousel as a whole in the offseason. I mean, you're going to have potentially Cam Newton available again. You know, you're going to have Deshaun Watson, that talk. I mean, and then you're going to have, you know, there's been rumors that this is going to be Aaron Rodgers last year and Russell Wilson. You know, it's just so crazy that like the turnover that we might have, and you know, how this final half of the season is really going to impact a lot of that. You know, on the Dolphins side, you know, we're saying that it might be an audition period for Tua, you know, whether it's with Miami or with another team. So it's just funny to kind of look at it through those lenses, and you know, the Dolphins might not necessarily be competing for a playoff spot like the Panthers are, but you know, they're competing for a lot in terms of guys, you know, keeping their jobs. And I think this 3-game winning streak has done a lot to kind of maybe calm, you know, the owner Stephen Ross, or you know, the higher ups and whatnot. So it's just going to be so interesting to see how this second half of the season plays out, you know.
Yeah, and with that too, as the second half of the year plays out, we keep talking about quarterbacks and coaches. A lot of this too is how these draft picks keep developing. Yeah. Right now in Carolina, they're getting torn up on the ground. They allowed 190 yards rushing to Washington last week on 40 carries. In all of their losses this year, they're allowing, I believe, 160 on average. In their wins, they're only allowing 70. Yeah. And there's a lot of heat right now on Derek Brown, their first round pick from a year ago, top five pick. He's just not making, you know, he's not creating movement up front. And that makes me think of Miami at times with all the assets they've invested in the offensive line. You still see that offensive line struggling. So whether it's quarterback play, whether it's coaching, on-field decision-making, or these draft picks, it's all connected, where when you're a young regime, you've got to be able to hit those trifectas, or you're right, your seat gets hot and you're out the door sooner than later.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I've said it a lot, and, you know, a lot of people in Miami have said it, you know, that 2020 draft class is like still up in the air. And that was kind of like, I feel like that might be the one for a long time. It seemed like that might be the one to kind of do the general manager, Chris Greer, because you have Tua number five, took him over Herbert. Austin Jackson, number 18. I mean, they moved him from left tackle to left guard. And then you have number 30, Noah Igbinoghene, who can't even, he's a cornerback. He can't even be active on game day.
Yeah, he's been inactive.
Exactly. But, you know, I think, I mean, truth be told, I haven't really said it, but I think the 21 draft class for the Dolphins might have saved, you know, a lot of people's jobs, if we're being honest, you know, because they have Jalen Phillips, who's been really good, Javon Holland, who looked like he might be a star. Blanking on another one. I mean, obviously Liam Eichenberg has had his struggles, but you know, Jalen Waddle is their top receiver. So I'm almost thinking that it might kind of balance things out. So of course, you know, so much has to come together. You know, you talk about quarterbacks and how they have an impact on winning, but so much has to come together to put yourself in a position to be like a real competent organization and compete for those playoffs, you know?
Yeah. And that's why this has been fun talking about these two teams with you. Though it's NFC, AFC, and, you know, Matt Rhule's a second year head coach, Flores a third year. These teams feel like in real similar spots, like they're close, but they're not quite there. And this game Sunday is going to push one of the teams in that right direction.
Yeah, I mean, they're close in record too, 4-7 versus 5-6. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to really preview Sunday's game. Talk about a lot of different angles. You know, Christian McCaffrey, Cam Newton. You know, this is a tough defense that Miami's facing, probably the best in a couple weeks. So we're going to get into that on the other side of things. So stay with us. We're back on the Dolphins in Depth podcast. Still got Ellis Williams from the Charlotte Observer with me. I'm talking a lot about these two organizations who, as Ellis mentioned, you know, while AFC, NFC, I mean, they're kind of similar, you know, both pursuing Deshaun Watson, both trying to turn things around with fairly new coaches. And obviously they play on Sunday. You know, I find this to be an interesting matchup for the Dolphins because while the team isn't on a three-game winning streak, the defense has improved from those early season struggles. The offense starting to show signs of life. You know, I think this Panthers defense is definitely the best defense that the team has faced since week 8 against the Bills. We all know that the Dolphins have struggled in both those matchups. You know, we're still seeing similar issues where, you know, the team starts off strong, kind of gets bogged down in the middle quarters and then turns things back up in the fourth quarter. I mean, Tua is statistically one of the best fourth quarter quarterbacks in the NFL. But again, you know, we've seen some of these big plays that they just couldn't hit on, you know, the most recent being a 65 yarder to Matt Collins, that kind of gave them the lead in the third quarter. You know, you can debate whether it's because of busted coverages or whatever, but you know, they're hitting on the plays. That's what you can say. I mean, they didn't do that before and they're doing that now. But they're going to have to prove it again against a tough Panthers defense. I think that they're third or so in terms of efficiency by Football Outsiders. So, I mean, this is a really good unit, especially against the pass. I mean, I want to ask you, Ellis, I watched the condensed version of the Panthers-Washington game this morning. And one thing that stood out to me, you know, I wasn't watching the All-22. I don't think that was up yet. Just watching the condensed clips. And you mentioned it before, Washington had a lot of success running the ball, especially on those kind of like those outside zone stretch plays where you kind of look for a crease and cut back. I guess, is that maybe like the one weak spot of this Panthers defense? And if not, or if it is, what else do you think the Dolphins can kind of attack on Sunday?
Yeah, it's a glaring deficit in the Panthers defense right now. It started against Dallas, their downhill running style, the wide zone. Minnesota Vikings carved up them as well, and Arizona had a little success with it, not in bunches, but in a few hit plays there. And then Washington just came in here and really bullied the Panthers front seven. And what's going on with the Panthers front from what I'm seeing on film is, you know, they deploy a lot of smaller linebackers and play them as edge rushers in a, you know, a four eye or a five outside. And that makes it hard to contain the edge. You know, Hassan Reddick's a great pass rusher. You know, he's 6'1", 240, right? He's not your traditional 4-3 defensive end. You know, they play two linebackers, three safeties, a lot of corners, and that's just not going to get the job done consistently in stopping the run. Now, I don't see this as a team that's going to start changing their personnel because they don't have a lot of options. This is how they've built this defense. Where they need to be excellent is on, and I'm going to end up saying this about the offense too, but they need to be excellent on third down and getting off the field. Tyler Heinicke converted a 4th-and-4. You know, throwing the football. And so you can give up yardage between the 20s. You can allow teams to run the football on you. It's not the sole reason why you lose. But when you combat it with breakdowns in coverage and critical moments, that's when your team is going to fold. And that's what Washington was able to do. They scored with 14 seconds left right before halftime on a 12-yard touchdown pass from Heinicke to Terry McLaurin. So the combination of a consistent running game and then timely kill shot throws has been what does Carolina in. And I'm curious, is Miami set up to play that type of game? Or how have they been rushing the football this year? I haven't seen a lot.
They're one of the worst. They're one of the worst rushing offenses in the NFL. I mean, they've only rushed for over 100 yards, I think, three times. And they rushed for over 100 against the Jets. That was the first time since week 7. And that, it's funny. That's why I asked you, because, you know, this is a really aggressive Panthers defense, it seems. I mean, they have Hassan Reddick and Brian Burns on, you know, bookend edge rushers. Yeah. I think that they can give Liam Eichenberg, the left tackle, and Jesse Davis, the right tackle, a lot of issues. So I was asking you that to set it up. Like, you know, if this Dolphins offense can run the ball, you know, they don't have to run the ball as well as, you know, they have to get 190, but if right. they can get 100, I mean, the Dolphins run on early downs kind of a lot more than I would like them to.
Okay.
But I also understand it because I think that they want to take a little bit of pressure off Tua. And I think in recent weeks, and especially last Sunday, they were able to kind of like pick up 4-5, getting those second and manageable. And you know, a lot of people talk about Tua's arm strength, can he throw the ball 60 yards downfield, whatever. But he's really good in, you know, 10 to 15, 8 to 12, yep. that range. So if you can get in those third manageable, I think that it takes a lot of pressure off that offensive line. You know, you don't want to be in a third and 12 situation where, you know, you got to do a three-step drop or whatever you know, let those defensive ends or outside linebackers tee off. So, yeah, I mean, I do think that, again, this is a game that they might be able to run a little better. I've written about this and tweeted about this, which is just really weird to me. You know, like PFF has the Dolphins offense line just graded terribly in like pretty much all metrics, but ESPN's run block win rate, I mean, the Dolphins are like 7th. And you know, all these metrics are different. You know, run block win rate is pretty much how long can you sustain your block for 2.5 seconds.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's how ESPN grades it, but they're seventh and they've been like top half of the league for the majority of the season, which is why I was wondering, like, where's that dissonance? It's because the running backs aren't as good. But I think that Sunday was kind of a step in the right direction against a pretty good Jets front. And again, if they can do that against the Panthers, that'll go a long way to kind of taking the pressure off the offensive line, especially those tackles.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they have a commitment to the run game like that. You said they've been running it on early downs. Where the Panthers could get Miami in trouble is, you know, you said third and 12. I'll go even a step further. I'll say, you know, that third and 7, third and 8 range. Hassan Reddick is third in the league right now with 10.5 sacks. Brian Burns not too far behind him, I think 7 for himself. They're both on pace for career highs. This is a defense that wants to create havoc and play fast and not, you know, blitz to the sense that Miami did against Baltimore Thursday night a couple weeks ago, but they're going to send 5, maybe 6, and they're going to do it quickly. And it's usually those ends that win. Jeremy Chinn can play their safety, can play around the line of scrimmage. So if you get them in a spot where they can just start teeing off on those young tackles, and, you know, then a turnover, you generate a turnover, where this game's going to be completely different if those ends can start getting after Tua. And then that's when really the Carolina is playing its best football.
Yeah, I haven't looked up the metrics very recently, but I remember maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, I saw some like graphic and it showed that Tua wasn't really like a crazy blitzed quarterback. And I thought that was surprising. Okay. I guess that the thought process by opposing defenses is, hey, we can get pressure with 4 because a lot of defenses have. But I think it will be interesting to see how we kind of does in the face of that pressure and you know, that blitzing. You know, on the other side of things, when we're looking at the Dolphins defense facing the Panthers offense and vice versa, you know, early on, you know, way back when Cam signed with the Panthers, which obviously wasn't too long ago, I had a fan comment on my tweet when I said, you know, Cam's probably going to start. And he says, hey, like, we handled Lamar. Cam is going to be nothing. And I asked the defensive coordinator, Josh Bohr, about that, you know, earlier. I guess it was Tuesday morning. I said, hey, you know, most people are going to look at Cam and say, hey, the Dolphins were able to control Lamar Jackson, the best running quarterback in the game. Do you see any differences? And he said, hey, like, yeah, they do some of the similar same QB runs, but they kind of dress it up a little different. You know, it's a little bit, it looks a little different. I personally don't think that this matchup really comes down to, can the Dolphins contain Cam Newton? I think it's more so, can they contain Christian McCaffrey? Because usually when he's healthy in the lineup, this offense kind of revolves around him. And while Cam Newton might not be as dynamic a runner or even thrower as Lamar Jackson, I think that having Christian McCaffrey be in the backfield when you're doing those option runs, it's a lot more pressure on a defense as compared to when Lamar Jackson is doing it with like Devontae Freeman and Le'Veon Bell. I guess, what is the best way you would say to contain McCaffrey? Because I mean, they're gonna hand the ball off to him. They're gonna spread him out. He's gonna run routes out the backfield. I'm not sure there's any linebacker on the Dolphins defense that can stick with him. But I mean, how would you contain him if you were a DC?
Yeah, Washington. Well, first of all, look, you're not gonna contain him from a yardage standpoint. This guy goes over 100 yards from scrimmage in the first half almost every game I've been to. He is going to get his, you know, he's like a NBA scorer. You're going to accept his 20 points a night. What you can't let him beat you in are those situational moments when you do decide to blitz and he can really burn you and gash you. And that's why I would say that this matchup is completely different than Baltimore, Miami, because Lamar, a lot of times back there, was just going empty set, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and he would just get teed off from the safeties blitzing and have no options. Cam will be back there with McCaffrey. And if you're going cover 0 man coverage across the board and McCaffrey's in the backfield, you know, those angle routes, those Texas routes are going to be there all day. Mm-hmm. And one-on-one McCaffrey versus a linebacker or safety is usually going to end well for McCaffrey. So what you do with McCaffrey is you try to have your defensive ends chip him when he starts his route. You see sometimes when he goes out on starts a route and the defensive end notices he's doing that, the defensive end will delay his rush and try to get a hand on McCaffrey and then continue his rush, which, you know, buys more time for the quarterback, but also delays the route that he gets out on. And then you see a linebacker covering him inside and you try to have a safety outside. Now that's in a perfect world. That's something you can't do every snap, which is why McCaffrey gets his. So McCaffrey has a chance to really be the complete difference maker in this game if Miami decides to come out and blitz heavy like that. If they're playing, you know, rush three, rush four, and dropping six or seven, then this is going to be more on Cam Newton and his decision-making, his intermediate passing, and the Panthers' ability to run the ball. They only ran the ball 20 times against Washington. Matt Rhule said after the game he wants to rush it upwards of 30. So this is again, an offense that's still looking for an identity. I'm not sure exactly what form of the Panthers you're going to get. I just know that an all-out blitz against Cam Newton and Christian McCaffrey probably gives McCaffrey the advantage because of the one-on-one matchup.
Yeah, and you know, even Xavier Howard said like a couple of days after that Thursday night game, somebody was asked him, you know, do you think you can do this for us this season? And he was like, heck no, you know. He was like, man, this is football. Like, we can't just keep on teeing off on people. And you know, he's like, they're gonna adjust. And when we saw that a little bit in Sunday's game where, you know, the Dolphins would show cover zero, because you know, they'll show cover zero and then they'll drop two. They actually rush four and then drop a couple guys, or they'll rush five and still drop some guys. You know, they'll show cover zero, but not really, you know, play cover zero after the snap. And I thought the Jets were actually really prepared, you know, using some pick routes, getting the ball out of Joe Flacco's hands a little quicker. Obviously he's not as mobile as Cam or Lamar. And, you know, so you really need to get the ball out quickly. But you know, I'm even thinking of earlier in the Dolphins game, you know, they had some problems with Michael Carter just on handoffs, you know, on normal runs. So I'm thinking of, you know, the way, you know, what comes to mind is that touchdown catch that, McCaffrey had, you know, in the Washington, it was a great pass by Cam and a great route. You know, he just kind of, it wasn't really a real route, but he just kind of leaked out. Went right up the seam. And, I'm not sure if the Washington defense was in man or zone, but he just kind of got behind everybody and Cam just threaded it to him. And I'm just thinking about the mismatches that's going to cause, which is why I say, you know, it's not really about stopping Cam. It's about stopping Christian McCaffrey. You know, Cam didn't really, I mean, outside of his touchdown, I mean, I don't think he didn't really break a lot. You know, he had, had a couple runs here and there for a couple yards, but it was nothing crazy, you know?
Yeah, the whole offense is lacking explosiveness right now. Cam had 10 carries, 46 yards, you know, 4.6 average there, obviously. He only had one pass deeper than 19 yards.
That was a touchdown pass, right?
That was a touchdown pass. So a lot of this has been dink and duck. And it's been a theme all week. How can this offense get more explosive? And they're going to try against Miami. They have to, or you're going to see an offense that can't sustain drives. They had four drives be four plays or shorter. Mm-hmm. And that is why the defense was on the field so much and how you end up coming up short. I think Washington ran 16 more offensive plays and had the ball for 11 more minutes. And, you know, you combine all those factors with a lack of explosiveness, you're not going to win games.
I was going to say, man, you gave me some PTSD when you talked about explosive plays and where they at. Cause for a couple months, that's all we were asking everybody in Miami, man. But they finally started to put it together. I do think that this is one of those kind of defensive oriented games on both sides where, you know, both teams are kind of leaning on their defense to really set the tone, maybe force a turnover here and there, give them some good field position. I don't really see this being a high scoring game. And, you know, as we go into game predictions, you know, this is a real toss up for me. You know, I wouldn't be surprised at either outcome. I really do think this game is going to be a lot tougher than maybe some Dolphins fans believe. Again, you know, just because it's Cam Newton, they stopped him last year a bit. They stopped Lamar. Man, a lot of people aren't going to like this. I think I'm going with the Panthers in a really close game. And the thing is, it's not because the Dolphins, you know, aren't talented enough to win this game. I think they are. But I do think that this 3-game winning streak has kind of been a byproduct of them beating up on, you know, the Ravens are a good team, but the defense isn't. And they've kind of been able to take advantage of some really bad defenses. And, you know, if the Panthers have one or two busted coverages like we've seen in the past couple of weeks, then yeah, okay. And if they can generate a 50-yard pass play off that, then yeah, they might be able to put up some points. But this is still an offense that like struggles to break 24. I mean, they got scored 24 against the Jets, but you know, it really took that entire game to get the 24. I mean, the offense scored 16 against the Ravens, and then they had the scoop and score by Xavier Howard. And I just feel like, you know, it's not luck or anything. I just say, you know, eventually the ball doesn't roll your way. You know, the ball kind of rolled their way, didn't roll their way for 7 weeks. It's kind of rolled their way for 3 weeks. I think we do see, you know, the market kind of correct, and maybe the Panthers make one more play than the Dolphins do. How do you think this game plays out?
You laid it out perfectly. These teams remain so similar in their trajectory in this season. Just looking at the Dolphins schedule, you know, if Miami can win this game, they've got a chance to string together some wins.
They do.
You know, I see they got the Jets again, the Giants, who just fired their offensive coordinator. The schedule gets soft. The Panthers, I'm worried about what they have in week 13. And what they have in week 13 coming up after Miami is their bye week. And this seems like a team that is just needing their bye week desperately, not from a health standpoint, but to just recharge and get Cam Newton fully up to speed. And you talk about offense that can't generate a lot of points. The Panthers, 21 against Washington, 6 against New England, 19 against Atlanta, 3 against the Giants.
It might be first to 21 in this game.
That's what I'm saying, right? Yeah. So give me Carolina 21-20 in a real close game. And like you said, it's just going to be one more play. I really don't have a great feel for this one. And it all becomes down to the quarterback that is going to be able to make a play at the end. And I don't know if that means Tua throwing it against this Panthers defense or Cam making something happen with his legs. I lean towards the Panthers and Cam just finding a way. They had a chance to win the game at the end against Washington and didn't. I think they learned from that and come out on top in Miami.
Yeah, it really is a toss-up. It really is. And, you know, we keep on saying these teams, two teams are different conferences, but they're so similar. Like, the Dolphins are on a three-game winning streak. You know, if they win this game, I will actually entertain playoff hunt talk. I won't say playoff talk, but yeah, playoff hunt talk. Because I do think that they're going to beat the Giants and then beat the Jets after their bye. And like you said, I mean, it's an opportunity to kind of get back on the right track. You said that they have a bye coming up. You know, another week for Cam to really get this system under his belt, and they could potentially maybe start to vie for a playoff spot. So, I mean, this is both teams aren't, you know, they're not solid playoff contenders, but I mean, this is a really important game for both organizations right here.
It is. It's going to decide which way the season goes. One team's going to feel all their playoff hopes be dashed if they lose, and the other is going to feel like they're right back in it. And that's why they play the game, my man.
Yeah. Man, it sounds like you've been listening to the podcast. That's what I say that all the time. I say, that's why we play the games.
I like that.
You might be listening.
I'm
just messing with you. But now it's definitely, you know, it's not very often you say a game between two teams with losing records is interesting. But yeah, the storylines, it's an abundance of storylines in this one. It's going to be an interesting game at Hard Rock Stadium on Sunday. Just curious, what's your favorite Thanksgiving side? I mean, we got Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday. What's your favorite side? I mean, I'm a macaroni and cheese guy. I know Matt Judon was just slandering it, but what's your favorite?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be real basic here, but just load me up some mashed potatoes, put all the
butter. You like Bill Belichick.
Put all the butter in those and just let me sit and marinate in that, man. I'll go any sort of, you know, that creamy whip mashed potato where you still got the skins in there, mash it up all day. I'm here for that. The mac and cheese is to die for, too. I don't know how Judon could talk about the mac and cheese like that. That was disappointing to see today.
It really was. It really was.
But you? How about you?
No, let's say I like the mac and cheese. I like ham.
Yeah.
I like the canned cranberry sauce. You gotta get it canned. You know, you gotta have the ridges
sure. In
there. But I'm excited. You know, I remember I was supposed to cover when I was covering the Ravens, I was supposed to cover the Thursday night game between them and the Steelers.
Yeah.
And obviously they had the COVID outbreak, so they like postponed it three times. So I didn't get to cover a Thanksgiving game, which I was kind of, you know,
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not happy there was a COVID outbreak.
Right.
I was like, hey, I mean, at least I get to relax on Thanksgiving and you know, eat some food. So I'm glad to be doing that again this Thursday. And then I'm sure you'll be glad to kind of relax, watch the games, eat some food as well, man.
Exactly, man. Enjoy your time home. I'm glad we're able to do this. enjoy some ham, enjoy the turkey, and then it's right back to Miami on Sunday, right back at the job, man. Let's get it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm glad and excited to see you on Sunday. But this brings us to the end of another edition of the Dolphins in Depth podcast. I want to thank Ellis so much for joining me, talking some Dolphins and Carolina Panthers. We'll be back next week to recap another Dolphins game. But until then, you guys take care and have a happy Thanksgiving.